Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Unfinished Music. This is Greg Verga, along with Rick Moore at Beachbrook Studios. It's good to be back. We've been away for a few weeks, and today we are joined in studio by Mike Tells, who's also known as Night Heron, his little project. So thanks for coming by, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Want to start us off with the tune?
Sure. This is called Only in the Summer.
Summer. Great
Thank
job,
you.
Michael.
Thank you.
So, welcome. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me. Thanks so much.
So, you know, first of all, I was totally unaware of your project, and I had seen you, God, way back when my daughter Abby was in the Whiz at the high school. You were in the pit playing with the band with your Rickenbacker. That caught my attention.
Yeah.
But my younger daughter, Julia, mentioned that you had some tunes out there, and I said, really? So I listened.
She heard it.
So I said, gave them a listen, and I gave you a call, and here we are. So thanks a lot. So tell us you know, about this project that you've got.
Well, it's just it's something I started doing. I've always wanted to write songs, and I've always listened to enormous amounts of music, and I haven't really found, I never found the nerve to start really doing it until about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's, I can't even explain it, just something switched, and it just started coming out, you know, and since then I've just been regularly putting it out there. I don't perform a lot, it's more of a recording project, but
a little Alan Parsons action here.
Yeah, exactly. But it's something I'd like to try performing in the future. But that's So it's just mainly a recording project.
Right.
I do. So.
Okay, Mike. Yeah. We always ask people. See, we're so familiar with you, but we always ask people about their personal or professional background.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about your background, education, and so on.
Okay. So I am. This is my 17th year teaching English at Gloucester High School. And so that's the main.
Okay, that I knew.
That you know. And before that, I grew up in Gloucester. I went to school in Amherst. I went to UMass Amherst, studied English there. Then went on to Boston University, got a master's in English at Boston University. And the whole time I've been with my wife, Amber, who. We've been together for a long time, since 1992. Mm-hmm. She's from Gloucester as well.
Yeah.
And she's my best listener as far as as far as this project goes. So you probably hear about her a lot. And I've got a son named Charlie, and we're just living in Lanesville. We're out in Folly Cove.
Yep. What about the music? How did you learn music?
I started when I was six. I started playing guitar when I was six, and I took lessons from Mark French in
Bayview, right? Revere Street.
Buttman Avenue, actually.
Yeah. Oh,
right. He's out there in Lanesville, and he was great. I had a great time with him, and it was off and on. Like, I started early, but I wasn't always the most dedicated. You know, the teenage years aren't the most focused, so they kind of I don't know if I excelled at that time, you know, but then after, in my college years, I got back really sort of focused on it and tried to improve. But yeah.
So. And so what were your influences music wise in terms of wanting to play?
In terms of wanting to play, I think when I was younger, I'm trying to think of what, you know, the first music that meant a lot to me when I was really younger was, and I don't listen to him as much now, as Cat Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
Just something about, he got this kind of a pure folk sensibility into my mind. There's something about him that I really was attracted
to. Before he turned terrorist,
right. Before he went.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I got that.
But that sound that he, and that voice of his really got to me when I was younger. And I think that got my mind sort of into the folk mode, and I was more receptive to that kind of thing growing up. And then from there, I think there were a lot of years where I didn't have a guitar hero or somebody that I really, a sound that I really responded to until middle school when I heard Johnny Marr for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And that just, I couldn't believe what I was hearing when I first heard that. It must have been, I think, 1989 or 1989.
Is that what made you seek the Rickenbacker?
Yep. That was a big motivation.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe what he was doing. I mean, he was using folk voicings, folk chords, but run through an electric.
Right, right.
In a setting that just, it was rock. It was still rock music, but with a folk sensibility. And there were songs, you know, it wasn't just riffs. He was writing songs, really deep, complex songs that were beautiful. And that's what got me. I think that's when I realized, oh, that's my thing. I really want to go down that route. And then I just followed the trail back to the birds and to the 60s, where a lot of that sound came from that means so much to me now.
I have to ask you, on the first song, we were talking before we went on the air about being nervous and, you know, screwing up, but you can always fix it, and nobody knows. But when you hit that tink, you get a little plunk there, a plunk there. You did it like three times.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of weird. Now, explain that to me.
So, oh, is it? This is
You were in the... No, you had it was like a one-shot
deal.
You,
like, slid up and...
Oh.
Like a little...
Yeah, that's it.
I kind of messed that up. Was that obvious?
So then you did it again, and it didn't sound messed up.
It didn't sound. Oh,
no.
I shouldn't have said anything.
No, it wouldn't have known.
So he didn't mess up.
No,
for the record,
nothing went wrong.
Well, who is it? The police that play off key on purpose, anyway. So you know.
Oh, right.
You know. So that's cool.
Yeah, that was just a little flourish.
Yeah.
So was the summer thing about having summer off? Is that the idea or what?
No. Well, it's hard. The song is about. It's a bit like that. It's about not being so in a grind in your life that you're just desperate to find times where you can just be yourself. Like you don't like, and you know from teaching, like you're Mr. Moore at school.
You're a performer.
That's who you are. You perform
that's
for
right.
8 hours a day, and you start to wonder, like, who am I outside of this context? You know, and it kind of gets to you, and so the song kind of gets at that, like a feeling of like, only in the summer can I, do I feel like a whole person sometimes.
I don't want to converse too much, but we've had people in here. It's funny when Greg and I ask about their creative process, or what a song means.
Mm-hmm.
There are some who sort of get offended when we ask them about the lyrics. How do you feel about when someone asks you about what does that song mean to you, or what do the lyrics mean? Because some people say, well, if you don't, you know, if you don't know, then who cares? Oh, you know what I'm saying,
right,
type thing.
Right, yeah.
But that explanation, I mean, and I have a caveat. I can't hear lyrics most of the time.
Yep.
I hear the music. Mm-hmm. Very rare do I understand the lyrics. So when you're writing songs and stuff like that, and someone asks you about it, what's your reaction?
It's not offense. I don't feel offended. I get like my explanation of that song, I think, was a little reductive too. I think it's hard. It is hard to describe, because sometimes songs have the lyrics work the way they do because there's like an ineffable quality about them that you can't, just talking about them kind of cheapens it a little bit. So, I mean, there's a lot more going on in the song than just me being
right.
sad about teaching, but, and that's not at all how I feel about teaching either. But I've found lyrics are really hard for me. Some songwriters, I think, start with the lyrics and they know, you know, for me, it's a bit of a bottleneck. I have trouble with them. The music comes first, mm-hmm. and then I try, oftentimes what I'll do is I'll write lyrics as a placeholder to hammer out the melody, to see, you know what I mean, try to get the melody, because that's what's really important to me. But then I'll come back and the placeholder lyrics make total sense to me. And I don't know, you know, like they're more apt than they would have been if I sat down and tried to concentrate. You know, I was like, wow, that really captured something that if I tried would have come out, you know. So if you try to explain that gets hard, you know. If someone says, well, what's going on,
right,
it's like, I don't know. I, at the moment, I wasn't even thinking. It was some kind of a dream logic that comes out.
Well, thank you for explaining that to me, because I'll be more careful now when I ask
I don't know. I mean, it's fun. I don't feel, you know, I'm not upset by trying to explain them, but I'm only a little embarrassed if I can't, you know. You know what I mean, like I can't fully get that across, mm-hmm. you know. So
well, one interesting thing that there were several interesting things, but one interesting thing on the your bio, and also I'm pretty sure it was on your Bandcamp page,
yeah.
a lot of your songs are, or maybe the EPs themselves are from a piece of art that somebody provides for you.
Yeah I do. I'm really I don't know, it sounds kind of weird, but a lot of times when I'm writing a song, writing music, I like to see something, like I respond to an image.
Mm-hmm.
It could be anything, like a photograph or someone's art or something. Usually a visual, some sort of a visual stimulus gets me going and gets me in a mood and gets me focused on music. I don't know if they call it, maybe that's synesthesia, what they call it when sensibilities cross, you know. And but yeah, so art means a lot. It just means a lot to me. And I just happen to get to know, I've gotten to know a lot of really, really talented artists that have been really generous with their stuff and have lent it to me, so.
Well, so we don't bury the lead, mentioned Bandcamp. I was amazed at how much content you had on Bandcamp. So people want to find you, I guess it's Bandcamp / Night Heron?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Heron.com. Yep.
And so check it out and take out your credit card and make some purchases while you're there. So anyway, why don't we hear one of the recordings that,
sure.
while Rick cues it up,
right.
Which would you, Rick, we'll throw it, let you spin the wheel.
What would
you like to
Stealing Away, what would you prefer?
Sure, Stealing Away is great.
All right, let's go with that one.
All right.
And we're rolling.
All right.
Thank you.
was Night Heron Stealing Away.
Stealing Away, yep.
And so, you want to tell us a bit about that particular project?
Sure, that one, I remember the whole, my idea behind it was, I had a lot of people telling me that, that my tunes were really hazy, and which I'm fine with that. They liked it. It was like, you know, your music's kind of, it's pretty and it's hazy. It was usually the response I got. Mm-hmm. And, I started to worry that they were a little too hazy, you know? Yeah. And, I thought I got to anchor them with something. So I tried to build a song from the drums up. Mm-hmm. And, close mic'd, like really close mic the drums and tried to make that a focus. And, so basically that's me trying to anchor the haze with some close mic drums, you know, to pull it down, you know what I mean? And Amber's always telling me, Amber's a great, listener because she comes from an R&B. She loves R&B. She loves dance. She really responds to music that moves you. You know, she's the biggest Prince fan, I think, in the entire world. She really, really, that's where she's coming from. So I always hear her voice telling me, you know, just, you know, get a little rhythm in there. Like your audience is going to want to dance a little bit sometimes, you know? So that was an attempt to anchor it with some rhythm, you know, get the rhythm in there.
You did all the instruments, or?
Yeah, I did it.
Outstanding.
Overdub City.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? Because everybody's got like a different process when they're doing it all themselves. I typically will find a drum machine beat and do the guitar track with it.
Yep.
And then do layer the bass, extra guitars and stuff, and then sometimes go back and play, you know, a real drum set and go over it. So how do you handle it?
Right. Well, I do it all those ways. I didn't have a drum kit. I've always played drums, but I didn't have an actual kit until recently. Yeah. So I was using drum machines just by themselves. And then, you know, I wasn't paying a lot of attention to the drums. I just use it as functional. And then sometimes I would overdub auxiliary percussion over a drum machine, you know, and then I got the kit, and then I would do both. Like I'd set the, get the drum machine going, play over the drum machine. Maybe I would, for that song, I just did it straight, just with a metronome, just played a beat with a metronome and that kind of thing. But so I've done it all, and I'm not against drum machines either. As long as it sounds like a drum machine, this is the thing, like it's got to sound, I don't like garage band soundy drums, that kind of synthetic.
But they're trying to pass it off as a drummer.
Yeah, trying to, you know, it's not a real drum, but it's like, nah. You know, if I'm using a drum machine, it's going to sound like a chintzy 80s drum machine. That's just my thing. It's just a thing I got, you know?
Right, but if you listen to those classic 80s songs that use drum machine, it's like, okay, this isn't a drummer. This is some guy flicked a switch, but that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and the, you know, you make up for it in other ways, you know, but... But I can't stand that kind of almost sounds like a drum, but not really, you know, it's not, you know, it's like auto-tune, which we were talking about, like it almost sounds like singing, but you know, it's not.
Right.
And what is the deal with auto-tune with you guys? I mean, you got the people who have come in here, Mike, and you're, you know, present company included, are real.
Yeah.
And when I listen to auto-tune, and these are people who, we talked about it earlier, people who have hit songs and they make a lot of money touring and so on, and they're big names, and they can't sing for squat live.
Right.
They have dancers. I mean, you get and when I go to a concert or I go to listen to somebody, I want to hear the music.
Yeah.
And so what's the deal?
I don't know. I mean, and in my mind, I actually prefer. I know it sounds weird. I don't like really trained sounding singers. I like singers that have faults. I like to hear that
stuff. Raw quality.
Yeah, like a raw, you know, if you're pitchy or if it's, you know, whatever. I just, you know, I like a naturalness.
Well, it's funny. I think of Neil Diamond. When Neil Diamond first started, he was strictly a folk singer.
Yeah.
Strictly folk rock.
Yep.
And it was very raw. And his singing wasn't that good.
Yeah.
But it sounded, you know, the lyrics. Yeah. And it was real. It was genuine.
Yeah.
And then he became Wayne Newton after that.
Right.
Like, you know, it's just so disappointing to me.
Right. I know. And I mean, I have a really thin, warbly voice, and it can get pitchy, and I just do what I can with it, but I'm not ever tempted to, you know.
All right, so listen, here's the big thing for me. Now you are a very educated man.
Mm.
You are totally into English literature, into writing, and is that a detriment, or is that a benefit when you write? Because You know, a lot of English teachers are frustrated novelists.
Oh, yeah.
but you have a joy in what you do. So how does that relate to your background and your love of English?
That's weird to say. I'm almost tempted to say it's a detriment because I worry over words so much. You know what I mean? And that can be a bottleneck, like I was saying. Like, I like when I'm making music, I want to keep the flow going, or else you start to fuss over things you don't need to fuss about, and it becomes you get sort of tangled. And I've never been a poet. I've always written prose, mm-hmm. so I've had more of a talent at prose. So when it comes to lyric writing, I get worried, and I worry over it. You know.
So in the creative process, do you trust your instincts? And you know, a lot of times you go. I don't know how that works, Greg. You go with your first your gut, your first words, or your first instincts, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, and along the same lines, continuing the question is, you know, when are you satisfied that something is finished? Because I tried to do a video once. Mm-hmm. And I was never happy with it. You know, and finally, the person I was worried said, hey, you got to publish this thing. You know, it's a debt. You can't keep doing it.
Right.
So, you know, the question becomes, I understand what you're saying. But there has to be a certain trust of yourself, I guess,
mm-hmm.
in that, okay, this is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I've learned to let go. When I do have to write lyrics, sometimes it does feel like you're pulling teeth, but I can't let that internal editor start gnawing at me. So I get down, sometimes I just convince myself, this isn't going to be the lyric. This is not it. I'm just going to write, I'm going to let the dream logic work out on the page.
There you go.
Just to get the melody in order, and then almost inevitably, I look back. I give it, put it on the shelf for a little bit, look back, and something's there that I'm like, I couldn't have done that any other way. And then you can edit. Then you can say, oh, that word doesn't sound good coming out of my mouth, because that happens. You're like, it's the lyrics. You write them and you say, oh, that's a good lyric, but then when you sing it, it doesn't sound right.
Really?
But the euphony isn't there, so you want to you start shaving things here and there, and you know, chiseling away. But you have to. I think for me, at least, you have to trust that initial instinct and just get it down. You know what I mean? I don't know if that answered your question, but
yeah, it's just that, you know, I know that editing is so important a part of the English language. Mm-hmm. And as a creative artist, there must be a time when you say, the hell with you, Shakespeare, I'm writing it my way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't need to have I can end with a preposition if mm-hmm. I want to.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. You know, so, oh man, a little conflict there.
Yeah, and then, we have to keep in mind the context. If you're writing for a pop song, there are certain things that come off as pretentious in a pop song. You know what I mean? You have to watch out for that. You don't want to alienate your audience, especially, and yet I don't want the lyrics to stick out. I don't want people to hear the song and say, whoa, you know, those lyrics are heavy. I can't deal with that. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, they're awful. Those are pretentious or whatever. The lyrics have to sort of fold in so that maybe, like, you wouldn't notice them when you first hear it, but then they sort of sink in.
You're not going to put Paradise Lost to music then.
Right, right.
Like Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner and Iron Maiden, right?
No, right.
You're not going to go that route.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, yeah. So that's that.
Yeah, you recall, Rick, it might have been Alan Estes when he was in here. I believe it was him. Maybe it was another guest, but they're talking about a friend of theirs who spent 25 years, still not done, working on an album. You know, because they're not satisfied,
keep
redoing and overdubbing.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you have to finish it.
Cut bait. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I've had stuff that, you know, a song that I've cut up and used to make two songs out of, you know, mm-hmm. that chorus there or that that middle eight would work better over here.
Right.
So,
right.
But I guess once you've actually recorded it, then okay, I guess it's done.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how I decide when it's done. I think I just get too anxious to get to the next song.
What's
so I just like I'm done. I gotta go.
What's the YouTube video or something where Dave Evans on The Edge hosts guitar? It's too loud. I forget what the name of it is.
Oh, and he's with
Jimmy
Page. Jack White and Jimmy Page.
Oh,
yeah.
And when Jimmy Page was on with the riff to
Kashmir. Yeah.
Okay. That actually was the ending of another song, talking about the creative process, what you guys are just mentioning. That was the ending of another song, and they decided to make it an entire song by itself.
Yeah,
so
that happens.
One thing can lead to another.
Yeah. And there's always, like, I feel like my mind's a junk heap of parts of songs that, like, at some point they fit together or they don't, you know, but yeah, yes.
So I ask everybody, do you keep a notepad with you, a notepad by your nightstand? I mean, stuff must pop into your head.
I do. Yeah. I have a pad next to my little recorder at home and little phrases. Like, if things that people say, you know, just offhanded phrases that, like, oh, you know, sometimes that one phrase will get you going, and then you've got a story or something, you know, or you've got an idea.
Well, this is a good segue into the techie segment. So, because there are people out there who are really interested in the how-tos. So, because when we started talking before the show, you mentioned how you have a 24-track mixing board and trying to stay away from the computer aspects. For the interest of people who are out there, just talk about what you do and how you do it.
Right. Well, oh, man, I am no expert. I mean, if you hear my songs, they're not mixed professionally. You know, they have limitations. But for me, I just want to get the idea across.
Right.
So I got, for pretty inexpensively, I got it's a Tascam 24-track recorder, which is about the size of, like, maybe a table, a TV tray. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just really, it's small. It's amazing how small these things can be now. Crazy. So I got that to keep myself away from the computer screen because I've spent enough time in front of the computer screen. So that was a learning curve. You know, I was trying to learn that, and I got pretty good at it. And it has its limitations. You know, mastering, it's got built-in mastering, you know, so it doesn't sound as full. It's limited. So I caved, and I'm now using what they call a digital audio workspace.
A DAW, yeah.
A DAW. I didn't know if it's...
That's the acronym.
A DAW. And what I do is I track with the 24-track, and then I dump the tracks into the DAW.
As raw wave files?
Yeah, just as raw wave files. And then from there, it's unlimited what you can do, which can be good and bad. You know what I mean? Like, that can be... You can take your digital scalpel out and shave a sound wave if you want to, but that can pull away from being creative. You know what I mean? It's its own creativity, but I just, that part of it interests me, but not enough to swallow up the creating music or playing music, you know? So I'm trying. I'm being game about it, you know?
Using Reaper.
Doing my best. Yeah, I'm doing it using Reaper. The Reaper and... learning as I go. I just, you know, I didn't read the manual. It's just like, if I have an emergency need, I'll try to figure it out in that moment. Like, how do I, you know, clean this mix up or whatever?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I've never read the Reaper manual, but I mentioned I was working with a friend of mine down the street and he's using Reaper, and he had a lot of the tricks that he, because he's an engineer, so he's kind of into reading manuals. So there's a billion things in there that, so as you move forward for that cheap software. I'm curious, how about recording drums? How much do you mic it? You mentioned that you have the low mics, but do you, like, put a bass, snare, overheads? What's the...
My budget was limited, so I have a pencil mic that I use. Mm. It's an SM57, I think, and it's on the hi-hat and the snare, and then I have a Shure bass drum mic, and then just another mic, like an ambient mic to catch over toward the ride cymbal. And that's about it. It's a tiny kit too. It's just snare, bass, hi-hat, and a ride. So that's what I'm doing. And it sounds
pretty good.
It's all right. I've been working on, Reaper has helped me to elevate the bass drum. Like because you want to feel that bass drum, you know, and the Reaper has been helping. Whereas on the 24-track, it got swallowed up. It wasn't able to do that. So,
all right. Do you want to play another live song for us?
Sure. Yeah, I'll give this a shot. see how this goes. This is a really simple song. And sometimes the simplest songs can be the hardest to play, so I'm going to do my best with it. But I've tried to... This is a song that I thought it was almost too simple, and I tried to add to it, and it just resisted getting any more complicated, so it has to be what it is. But it's called Like a Bulwark.
Thank you.
You took it all like it was free. Walking through some wasteland town with me. And I'm not so sure about this time. The things that held to poisoning you now. And you can't pull your eyes up off the ground. And I'm not so sure about this time. Further from your home, and you won't find another where you roam. It's all the same from where I am. Kiss her hand, it's okay to cry. Not even she can tell you why. And I'm not so sure about this time.
Bob Dylan-ish there.
Oh, do you think so?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, it does have a little bit of the, like a Mr. Tambourine Man thing. Well,
yeah. I wasn't going with the music so much as I was the lyrics that time, believe it or not.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Because you were telling a story. And there's a lot of passion in that song.
Yeah, it's kind of uncommon for me. I can be a little dispassionate sometimes. Uh-huh. That's my own, criticism of my stuff. But that song it's different, yeah.
Yeah, it sounded evoked Bob Dylan.
Thank you. I'll take that. I love Bob.
Yeah, I saw the subliminal Bob Dylan album tied in your portfolio.
Oh, yeah, I had that little poster in my room. That's an image. Like, if I look at Bob, there's something about him. He just energizes you.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If that guy is, you know, in my consciousness, then things usually go well.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah, it's a tough act to follow, especially, I mean, his first 10 years in the biz, his lyrics were just, you know, unreal.
There's nothing like it. Yeah, that was absolutely beautiful.
But that kind of thing, and Mike, I think you're a little different from most of the musicians who come in here, if I'm not mistaken, because many of them, especially the younger ones, aspire to doing this full-time all the time.
Yeah.
And they want to make a career out of it, and so they supplement their income with however.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hard life being on the – they're on the road a lot, a lot of those people, right?
Yeah, at least locally, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And on the other hand, we have artists who come in who are fully committed to their careers, their other careers, and they do mm-hmm. this not as a hobby, but it's more than a hobby. It's a passion. It's a dream. It's a love.
Right.
And you do have your full-time gig.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you reconcile this? How do you do it? How often do you play? How often do you write? Because a lot of us have, you know, we have our thing. Well, a lot of guys will play cards. A lot of guys will play sports or whatever, or do it all. And, right. And you have a child and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I know being an English, I could never be an English teacher, Greg, because it's too much work. Math was a lot easier to
papers.
Do.
Yeah,
it's insane what teachers have to go through now with all the additional stuff.
Right.
So how is this part of Mike Tells?
How do I do it?
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really hard. And what it comes down to is I just have micro units of time where I can devote that I can do this. So I have to And so I don't know if it really is helping, or if my instinct is saying having less time actually helps me in a weird way. But what I have to do is sometimes I'll compose in my head, or I just have to plan, because if a moment presents itself, like I have a moment at home and no one's around, I have to take full advantage of it. It's got to happen, because mm-hmm. it's usually an hour, and then dinner's got to be on. I got to, you know what I mean? So the realities of life just make it so that I have to be always thinking, like, if the moment presents itself, what am I going to do? You mm-hmm. know? Whereas if I had unlimited time, if I had a lot of time to devote to it, I almost wonder if I wouldn't be as productive. I know it's a weird thought. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people, the busier they are, the more that they, you know, with other things.
Well, we find that as teachers with kids who play sports and so on, they have to budget their time and they have to get the homework done. They do right. it.
Yeah.
Did you sing lullabies to your kid when he was a baby?
I had one song. It was a potty song. We'd sing a song like, help okay. me. He's not going to be happy with me because he's listening to this right now. Charlie, the greatest little guy ever. But we kept, when he was younger, I made a song that he really liked called the potty song, and we'd sing that.
Awesome.
We'd get into it, you know, and I don't know if it was effective, but it was funny.
Okay, so I see a marketing goldmine for you.
Oh, no.
You can do a child's book of songs.
Okay.
Okay, and a kid's book. Greg is an author who wrote a kid's book.
Yep.
You could write a kid's book of songs, and that the potty song would be the lead.
Be right in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, God.
Greg, maybe you two could collaborate with that.
Yeah,
no, that would be great. But, yeah, it's tough finding time. But the time you get is so much more meaningful, you know what I mean? And it's happening. Somehow I'm pulling it. Like, it's just happening, you know? And I must say, Amber and Charlie are as much a part of this as I am, because they, whenever they can, they help me, they help make the time,
right,
you know?
Right.
And they're really, really supportive. So,
as you said, your recording room is sort of a central.
Yeah.
It's not like here I can sneak down to the basement and not bug people. But so they have to be cooperative.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, maybe that didn't come out right.
Yeah, no.
The fact that they're cooperative is a necessity because of where you are.
Yeah, we have a really small house. Most of this recording stuff is in the master bedroom, which Amber is a saint because of this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to break it down and you know, put it back up every time I record. Mm-hmm. So I have a system, you know, it's got to be fast, you know,
right.
And it's not like I have a road crew. So it takes a lot of planning and a lot of thought, but.
I don't know about you, but like when I want to record something, it is, you say, I want to finish it. Cause like you might have the bass part. That you might not remember if you come back 2 days later, if you hadn't recorded it, it's like, what the hell was I playing the other day?
Right.
So that's why I at least get the rough tracks down so you can come back and redo it you've done.
Well, you know, what's a godsend is on your iPhone, the voice message, memo thing, which I use all the time. So if I'm like getting my tie on, going to work, I think of an idea, it works out, I pluck it out, you know, and then I just record it on the iPhone and I have it there for the next time.
Right.
Well, you
that's
know the
essential.
One where Keith Richards for
riff there.
What was it, Satisfaction?
He was asleep. He was
and the thing
asleep.
Was just ripping around when he woke up. It was the reel was still going. I must have done, what's on there? Oh, my God.
It's incredible.
You talked about the creative process and owning something. And doesn't, what's that mean to you guys? Because to me, you talked about an artist to be able to take something and where nothing was before, a blank slate, a blank palette, a blank music stand, and to fill that up with something that, for want of a better word, gives joy or is meaningful. What does that mean to you guys?
Well, for me, I think it's kind of cool. We talked before the show about my old band. We had all our songs registered with BMI, and that just kind of makes you feel like, oh, not that we have tons of royalty checks rolling in, but the fact that they're out there and they're sort of registered that these are our songs and you've got a writing credit on these and they're yours and they're out there and anybody who wants to Google it was going to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So
right. For me, I feel it's satisfying for me because it's a form of communication that is, I think is more, it's fuller than just saying how, you know, if there's something on my mind or if something that I'm feeling you can telegraph it to someone, and it makes me feel good that that's out there, so that people I care about, really, I'm writing for people I care about and my friends and my family, and to give them a sense of, you know, the shape of my mind at any particular time, you know. So it's really satisfying to say, like, I've got this product that they could listen to, and they'd hear and experience what was happening for me in that moment, or I could communicate something to them that's beyond the music and beyond the words. It's the totality of it, really, you know. So that's what it means for me. That's mm-hmm. what makes it meaningful. It's just communication, but it's more, it just gets into the heart faster, you know what I mean? It just gets more direct.
I think it's just amazing when you can do that. And do you perform live, Mike, at all?
No, this is my first... This is my first
performance. So how are we doing as an audience? So
you... this is great. Very interactive.
<All right. laughs> You got to get out there, man. That's cool.
I know. Yeah, nerves. Definitely. I got to fight the nerves and get out there.
Well, I'm guessing the feedback must be important, Greg, right? When you're performing live, feedback re-energizes. I don't sort of like a feedback loop, I guess.
You give it back.
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing down here with playing somewhere with three or four other members, and you're all getting into it and smiling and basically patting yourselves on the back and applauding, that's one thing. But when you're out and you hear strangers who applaud, especially when you're playing original music, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, yeah. Wow, all right. So it wasn't just us.
Right. And it's hard, you know, if you're just like me, if you're just recording at home and putting stuff out there, the internet's just it's kind of a black hole. You know, you put your stuff out there and it just... You know, it's no one's fault. It just goes, you know, and nobody's picking up on it. So you don't get a lot of feedback, you know. So I think playing live might help me to get a sense of how things are going over, you know, because I've got Amber Charlie and I got a friend named Steve. I'm just shouting out to Steve out there, who are my best listeners, and I love you know, hearing what they say. But so that's, you know, it's the... The music online now is just a sea of stuff.
Right.
It's just, you know, how do you break into that, you know?
But, yeah, it's tough because we were talking about the auto-tune and the formulaic way the music industry is today. I mean, that's where the promotional dollars are spent is, mm-hmm. you know, who's going to look good.
Yeah.
And people want to go see the show, not necessarily hear the music, mm-hmm. you know? But let me do a quick station identification. This is Greg Berger along with Rick Moore on Unfinished Music here at Beachbrook Studios, live at msonewsports.com. Our guest today is Michael Tells, also known as the project Night Heron. Mm-hmm. So again, Mike, thanks for being here for that. Why don't we hit up a recording? That'll give us a chance to have a stretch break and switch guitars for you.
Okay.
And
good.
What are we going to hear, Rick?
Anything goes.
Okay, there's a couple of titles here, back-to-back, that kind of are interesting together. 3 a.m. again, and mm-hmm. Blackout, so
okay.
They sort of go together. I mean, and then you also have Summer's End, so which would you prefer?
Maybe we'll do 3 a.m. again, because that's Amber's favorite. That's,
all right.
Yeah, she really likes that one.
All right, so let's do that.
All right, 3 a.m. again. All right, 3 a.m. again by Night Heron. So we're going to be hearing some electric music here from Michael on his Jaguar, or as they'd like to say in England, the Jaguar.
Oh, yeah.
So you want to tell us a bit about, for the gearheads out there, since this is being recorded for Facebook Live, people can actually see it.
Oh, so they can, yeah.
Talk so about this signature model.
It's out of tune. That's one thing.
Yeah. Open just detuning, right?
Okay, yeah, this is it's a Jaguar, but we were talking about Johnny Marr before. It's a signature Jaguar, so he's rewired it and added a few features, and it's just a great guitar. It's got a nice, I can get really dark, soulful sounds. My other guitars are Rickenbacker, and it can be bright and jangly, which I love. But this one, if you want to get a darker sound, like a nice soulful, clean tone sound, this is really, really good for that. I love that. So,
all right. Before you start to play the song, maybe, Rick, can you just get a sound check? Because this is running through an amplifier over there. What are we playing here?
This is a song called Tear After Tear. It's on a new EP that I made. So,
which people can get at Bandcamp.
At Bandcamp.
Bandcamp.com/Night Heron.
Got to be better at promoting.
Yes.
I'm missing that part of my brain.
That's what we're here for.
All right.
Sounding guitar, but a guitar is only as good as the players. So I just love that open D sound. It's nice.
I know, it's a nice drone. I love things that drone.
Mm-hmm. I heard Bob Dylan earlier, and this time I heard Molly Hatchet.
Molly Hatchet,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, definitely. So I like it. I like it. I'm not going to pigeonhole you at all. No. Where did Night Heron come from?
This is interesting. I am, and my wife is, since we were in our 20s, we've been avid bird watchers. We kept lists, we did the whole thing. We're out there on Plum Island with all the folks, looking for birds. And night herons they're native here. You'll see them in the summer, in a pond. Like if you go to Niles Pond, you'll see one kind of on the edge of the pond. They're really striking looking birds, but it was just a real, it's a favorite of mine. Sometimes you have a totem bird if you get really into birding, you know, and that was the one. And they're funny because you don't notice them until you really notice them. They're out there. They have a kind of a hunchback. They're white. They have a shock of black feathers on the head. And they just leisurely, just wading along. And then when you see them, you usually walk right past them. But if you see them, it's like, whoa, that's incredible.
It's a great name, and it's a great
effect. Yeah, I like the name.
If I do a band, it's gonna be a downy woodpecker.
Okay.
That's my favorite.
they're cute. But the thing, there's another night heron. This is my new dilemma. There's a night heron that popped up in Portland, Oregon.
Really?
Yeah. A guy with he's got a slick thing going on. And this is, I've been doing under this name for a while, and he popped up, and I don't know what to do about it. I'm looking into trademarking.
Well, you could do that, or you could do night herring.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you could do NIT herring.
Yeah. I'm a little mad though. I'm mad at this guy.
Like, I don't blame you. Yeah.
Because he knows I'm out there. Because he's
really
got,
and
like,
he did
I
it
know,
anyway.
Yeah. Because he, he's had to get around my, he signed up in Bandcamp and he had to get around my URL,
Man.
Right.
So,
right.
I don't know, but it's really expensive to trademark. So,
I mean, it might be a matter of just sending him a cease and desist.
Yeah.
But I would tell you, it might be much ado about nothing, because before
he might.
Black Sheep Stampede, we were caution horses. Then we got in a panic because there was somebody in England with the same name. But it's like, none of us are going on MTV tomorrow. So,
right.
I mean, who cares?
Exactly. I know. So, yeah. So that's where it came from.
Okay.
So, if I have to change the name, I might be, maybe I'll be, I don't know.
K-N-I-T-E, N-I-G-H-E.
Yeah, right.
There you go. We're going to have him back because we talked too much this time. But I am curious, Mike, as to, I know when I was at Gloucester High School and I saw the talent that was in the building, how do kids react when they find out that you're a musician?
I was worried about that because when I first, that's why I took a pseudonym at the beginning, because I wanted to keep it away from the, as a teacher, you get paranoid. If the kids have something on you, they can mock you and everything. Well,
that's
they found out, a lot of the kids found out, and they've been so respectful about it. A few kids have brought it up, like, oh, I heard you play, and I heard this or that. No one has used it as a, against me, and the only reactions I've gotten have been really positive, and I think they seem happy that I'm just out there. I have another creative outlet, so it's been great. They've been really good about it. So that's good. It's turned out to be pretty good. And some of my former students that are now in college have told me that they really like the music, and they turned their roommates onto it.
Yeah,
which I'm pretty psyched about.
Well, as I mentioned, my daughter, who was your student, who just graduated from college, is the one who told me about you.
Right.
So
that's
nice. Here we are.
Now I got to go see her comedy show. I got to if she keeps it going, she's great.
Yeah. All right. So we're running up against the clock here. So this is Greg Verger along with Rick Bohr on Unfinished Music here at Beechbrook Studios on MSO News Sports. com. Our guest today has been Michael Tells, also known as Night Heron, and there's a whole story about the Night Heron, so just hit rewind if you're listening to this to hear that story again. And thank you so much for coming by, Mike, and having us sharing your music with us.
Thank you for having my first live performance.
All right.
Really good. All right, thank you very much.
So we're going to go out with a tune, Rick. Which
Blackout
one?
Blackout or Summer End?
Summer End would be great. I think that's a good one.
Summer End.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much.
See you next time, folks.